Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. In my first conversation with Priscilla Vang, you learned about her grandparents' journey from Laos to the United States. And from there, her grandparents traveled from Charlottesville, North Carolina, and Greensboro to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then made it over to Minnesota, where the land of opportunities kind of exploded for Priscilla. So today we're going to continue with her journey. Her and her family became a U.S. citizen, and because Priscilla was a refugee when she was 2.5. Is that accurate, Priscilla?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so you became a U.S. citizen in your 20s? Around
yes.
there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you got married to Roger. You had your first child, your only child. And that family has extended to what?
There's 4 grandchildren. There's actually 3 right now. The 4th one is making its way in July.
Oof. Oh, my goodness. A grandmother 4 times over.
Yes. It's very joyful. It's a blessing. It's a great blessing because they bring me so much joy and happiness. And, you know, they encourage me to be more creative and bring the creativity out of me.
Oh, yeah, right. That's wonderful. So to give you a little bit, so we're going to continue on her journey because she's a multi-venture entrepreneur. We're going to talk a little bit about her 13-year experiences in corporate accounting and tax preparation. We talked a little bit in our last conversation about the 2 degrees that she acquired in financial accounting and tax accountancy, which helped her prepare to launch 3 what I see as kind of connected ventures, but they are serving different industries. So an accounting tax practice, a payroll processing business, and a staffing firm. So Reward Staffing LLC is a firm that fulfills staffing requirements for manufacturers, filling entry-level positions, and provides farmers with field workers. Farming connects Priscilla to her heritage of farmers who immigrated to Minnesota from Laos. This business provided Priscilla with enough cash to buy her accounting and tax practice, Enlighten Accounting and Tax Solutions, LLC, and Payroll Vault, a payroll processing franchise in St. Paul. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that in a second. I would first like to look at the 13 years that you were in corporate accounting, because that really helped you with developing the launching board into entrepreneurship.
That's correct. Yeah. Working with a variety of industries allowed me to really think of what kind of business I want to build and where do I want to go from there. And so working with nonprofit and profit gives me the experience that I need to help a variety of business owners do with their accounting.
Yeah, so you worked at Ameripride Services, and as an office manager and accountant there, was that kind of your first corporate experience?
Yes, that was part of my journey after I got my bachelor in accounting. So that kind of helped me start my accounting journey. So that was my first job there, and then I left there to work for Wells Fargo, and then worked for Wells Fargo for a couple of years, and then I went to work for the YWCA St. Paul nonprofit, and it was one of the greatest experiences because I had one of the greatest boss there.
Okay, that yeah. always makes a huge difference, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then from there...
So were you helping them with their financials there?
Yes. My main goal was to focus on the health center, which is the gym, making sure that I'm taking out the monthly fees and entering a new membership in there, running reports for the health managers, you know, making sure that everything's in compliance there.
Okay. And then I've not heard of Robert Half. What's that?
Robert Half is a staffing firm. So what I left work when I worked for Robert Half, it's called a salary professional, it's actually a consultant. That's what we do. It's just a staffing firm that does major in accounting. But this is, what's unique about my that salary professional is that I'm the worker of Robert Half, but also working, they'll find clients for me to do projects for, like contract workers. Okay. Except you're getting the full benefit. You know, you get the whole holiday pay benefits, everything, instead of like temp to hire or contract workers, you know, where Robert Half, the salary professional position is where you go work on that assignment for like how long, like for maternity leave, or for my assignment was for Gambro, now it's called Baxter, where they needed an accountant there. And I worked there for almost 2 years because they were in the process of going through some transition.
Yeah.
So I worked there for 2 years, but then I had to leave there to purchase my business.
Yeah.
So I left that.
So that gave you kind of the HR background.
Yes.
Which I was always wondering about that, but I didn't get the, you know, until our conversation, I dig a little bit deeper in your background. Otherwise, I'm focused on your current businesses, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so Reward Staffing LLC, tell us a little bit about how you developed that.
So Reward Staffing was owned by my aunt and uncle, and they wanted to sell it because they ran it 1 year and there's too much work for them. So they were looking to sell it. So I talked to my parents and I talked to my husband. And I said, well, why not? I'm looking for a way to bring in cash flow so I can establish the other two businesses. So this was the first step for me to make the decision and purchase the staffing firm, because the staffing firm is really established and the cash flow was coming in really well. So we decided to purchase the staffing firm. And then from that
on, did you and Roger purchase it together?
Well, I was the owner of it, but yeah.
Okay. And what other line of work is Roger in?
He just worked for company. So he's a quality inspection.
Okay. Quality inspector. Does he have his own quality business, or like,
no,
is he a consultant or?
No, he doesn't do that. He works for our company.
Okay. All right. And so you and Roger purchased this Reward Staffing. What kind of entry-level positions with manufacturers do you fill?
Just entry-level production position. Kind of one of the clients we have is electronic assembly. That's what we do. And also summertime, where we work with local farmers to help find workers. And these workers are people who are, you know, in their 40s and 50s, who are not well-educated people that need some summertime job or summertime work, and just to help them to get out there just to get exercise and stay healthy, and also to provide the transportation for them to bring them out there, because a lot of them don't have transportation. Picking them up early in the morning, providing them transportation to the field, let them work however many hours they want to work, and then providing that back and helping my community. That's what I do. I think it's one of the greatest things, because a lot of these people, you know, they just need to be out there instead of being at home and stay unhealthy. Well, they'd rather be out in the field just to get a little exercise and earn a little cash or a little income,
yeah.
I should say, more income for them just to survive for the summer.
Yeah, and they feel like they're contributing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very good. And okay, in that same year, you also opened up a couple of other businesses. So Enlighten Accounting and Tax Solutions. Did you work for H&R Block for a time?
Yes, I did. I worked in H&R Block for 1 year. And then after that, I was working full-time, and I was just doing, and then after that, my brothers got a few friends who needed help with tax help. So I was just having, that's my startup, my first business, helping other people with taxes. And I was just doing that as a little, tiny little side business, not thinking, but I was hoping to grow it in the future. So that was the opportunity. Then 2016, where I said, I'm going to expand and grow. And then why not add accounting to it? Because that's what my background is, you know, helping small business owners. So then I incorporated that, the accounting and tax solution there. And I was thinking of another way to grow my business besides, and a way to work, because when, as a new to entrepreneurship,
yeah,
you know, you have to find ways to like grow yourself. So I was looking for ways to, how can I expand myself, and where do I get help? So franchise was the thing that came in my head. Like, where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? Or who do I look for so that I can start franchising? So then I started doing a couple of researches here and there, and then I found Payroll Vault.
Ah.
I found Payroll Vault, and I connected with Payroll Vault, Sean Manning and Marilyn. They're both awesome people. Okay. So, I connect with them, met with them, and, you know, everything was going really great. We were having a really great connection, and I decided, why not start with Behavioral Well, because this is where I can get the support that I need.
Yeah.
If I ever, you know, need help or anything, because really, when you start out all new, there's no support.
Yeah, and with the franchise, they're doing the marketing to help you out and kind of feeding you clients.
Yes. And also that's what taught me what networking is all about, because I never knew what networking was all about.
Okay. You know?
Yeah, working with them.
That's right. We do a lot of it as business owners. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that opens a door of networking and also helped me build the confidence to be out there to network with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Great. So that's how your three businesses connect, and that's how you kind of built them out also. It's kind of seasonal. Yeah, with accounting, like instead of getting a million clients and kind of going crazy during tax season, mm-hmm. you're kind of keeping it manageable so that you can also do the HR things. And that's kind of a steady work.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the staffing, the manufacturing part is steady, but the farming is pretty centered on summer work.
Summer work, yep. So yeah. It's got, yeah, like you said, it's a seasonal work thing where, you know, where the beginning of the year is tax season, and then summer is the farming season, and then the end of the year is just more for like the following, keeping up with the accounting stuff. So that keeps everything in a really good flow.
Yeah. So everything wasn't always peachy keen. I mean, before you started your business, and in 2013, you have privately told me, and you've given me permission to talk about this today, was absolutely the worst year of your life. And you went into a deep despair.
That's correct. It was 2013 was one of the breaking point of my life where things were just falling apart. My marriage wasn't on the best side. And, you know, having my brother-in-law, which is my husband's brother, living with us and, you know, bring him, his overseas wife over to live with us. And it was a struggle and going through the limiting beliefs and the lack of limitations. It was a struggle. And then finding that my 16-year-old got his girlfriend pregnant. So that was one of the, you know, like I wasn't ready for that, you know, because I was hoping he will finish school before he get married or be with another girl. But, you know, that was the downfall of it. But then one day when I was struggling through, I got a message. I was listening to KDWB, Steve Gyvee on KDWB, and he says, you can manifest anything if you put your heart to it. So that's when I start researching about manifestation, and I start looking into different type of teachers and what's available out there. So that was one of the, I guess, breaking point of my life and journey for me to continue to love myself and to develop the skills that I needed to. So that was a great point, or worst point of the year, but also a great point of my year.
Yeah, that you were noticing that these limiting beliefs that you had were kind of all coming together based on all these circumstances in your life, having someone live with you and then their beginnings of their family and then your son becoming a father at a young age and then some shifting. There's something else that we had talked about that I thought was important that I hadn't heard of that has to do with the overseas women in the community between 2005 and 2013. What did you notice going on in your community?
A lot of the men were talking to women overseas because the women here are becoming more independent. So I think it's losing control of these women in the U.S., they can manipulate women or do whatever they control women. So, and especially the girls overseas, they're living in third world country. So they're really good at sweet talking to men and bribing men for money.
I see.
Yeah, that's really, really good because they're like, you know, they could easily bribe men. And men in the U.S., they're like, oh, you know what? I have plenty of money so I could send money overseas, supporting their needs overseas versus, you know, working on the relationship here in the U.S. So that a lot of the men are being, and then a lot of those young girls overseas are really manipulating all these men here with their sweet talk.
Well, I'm always wondering, What if women are becoming like more independent and noticing the freedom that a democracy provides, that they that they can educate themselves and they can provide, you know, they can create kind of their own family unit and it doesn't have to look the same. And what is it about the men that aren't they feeling more freedom too?
Yes, they do. And they feel like their freedom where they can think they could control everything. You know, they want to control everything. But
that to me isn't freedom.
No.
That's domination over.
Yeah.
Like power over instead of like sharing power. So are men who are in heterosexual relationships not sharing the power as their wives are becoming more powerful?
Yes, because they feel like the wives are more control.
So are they threatened by that?
Yes, they feel threatened by that.
Okay.
They feel threatened because the women are now in more control. The women are now, you know, putting their feet down and not allowing the men to walk all over them.
Okay.
Yeah, the women are now, you know, understanding.
More empowered.
Yes.
Okay. And I just thought that would provide an opportunity for men to also be creative in empowering themselves by, you know, creating a little bit more equality in the relationship.
Not necessarily, because a lot of them, like you said, more dominant. They want to be more dominant. They like it? Yeah.
Okay, well, we can see that happening in a lot of places.
Well, they do. And yeah. Besides that, and they're also becoming more vulnerable.
Vulnerable?
Yeah, more vulnerable because like the girls overseas are more, they can sweet talk to them. They like to, because, you know, once a man likes to hear the sweet talk, the men will fall for that versus women, you know, us women here, we don't tend to sweet talk. We kind of over talk to our men. It's just, oh, nope, you're not allowed to do that, you know?
Yeah. So a different way of being. So that was also, you know, a contribution to feeling stress?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying that your husband was doing that.
No.
But it was, you were noticing that in the Laos community.
In the Hmong community. Oh, it's been happening. Yeah, Hmong community.
Why do I say Laos?
That's okay.
You're from Laos. The Hmong community.
Yes. Yeah. It was just a big shift changes for them in the Hmong community because there was a lot of people that were, especially the men, I think they're going through a change there too. So it's just like that time was just like big, huge changes for everybody. I think that the men's vulnerability is out there.
Yeah.
And being taken advantage of the girls overseas.
Okay. And now we're entering a phase where vulnerability is, we're understanding it a lot more thanks to Brené Brown. But you're also aware of, you have some concerns about the first and second generation of Hmong who are growing up here. And like in Minnesota, so we have, if I'm looking at the numbers, a population of 66,000. So it's actually, you know, it would be like a bigger town.
Yes.
A city of Hmong. And so the offspring are coming up and you have some concerns about these two generations. Part of it, because you're so familiar with your own experiences, with having limiting beliefs, and also the tremendous amount of work that you've done in the time that I've known you since 2018, you've really tried to understand what the concept of abundance and prosperity is and thinking and what does that look like in your life and how does that work with money in your life, creating prosperity. And you've been kind of realizing, I just want to keep growing. It feels so good. And at the same time, you also want to address some of the limiting beliefs that are, you know, coming from really fear-based beliefs, which lead to a lower self-esteem, which also leads to then people making decisions that are not great for them in their lives. So what are your concerns about this upcoming generation?
My concern for this is a lack of motivation and the lack of confidence, the lack of resource, not enough to expose to a variety of professional, different work ethics and concern about motivations, low self-esteem and fear of being judged and competition with family.
What's the competition with the family? What is that?
It's always like comparing to other family members. I mean, that's one of the biggest thing that I growing up, it's always compared to other family members. We're not the well-educated people versus the well-educated people. Whereas we're not the richest people versus the richest people. You know, we're, our parents are always comparing us to our, especially our cousins and relatives. And, in, you know, because they were brought up like that. So they were not encouraging them and says, you know what, you could do better, you can do more. But, you know, it's because of the limiting beliefs that they were brought up that reduces the lack of confidence in a lot of people.
Yeah, and contributing to kind of a lower self-esteem because it doesn't feel like you're good enough then.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, where they're like, okay, you need to go get a doctor's degree for you to be the perfect person. You know, to become a lawyer, to be that. But they don't encourage them to like, hey, it's okay to go out there, be an accountant. It's okay to be an IT person. Or it's okay to work in a CNC job. You know, you earn as much as a lawyer too. But, you know, for them in their eyes, this have to be these top paying dollars. Or you have to be an honor student. You have to be a straight A student. Whereas profession for them, but not talk about the imperfection. Like, it's okay if you're not perfect. It's not, you know, it's okay that you don't strive for that. But as long as you are doing what you love to do, then that's the things that, you know, parents nowadays will need to help their children with.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between, like, getting more educated to understand yourself and understand all the different types of professions and to learn professions and applying that to other jobs. Like, I don't know, there's such a focus in our country about higher education, which is good, but we have a shortage, right, of blue-collar plumbers and electricians. And those also, like, you can get your higher education and you can bring that into that profession.
Yes.
So I think we need, like, more of a blending instead of the white-collar workers and the blue-collar workers that actually, you know, everyone should be educating themselves and reading other materials to understand how other people are living. And that helps you find out more about yourself. Yeah. So what would you like to say to address kind of the concerns that you have about this upcoming generation?
I think it's just that parents need to get more involved, more encouraging. Teach them the abundance. And, you know, there's so many things, opportunities out there. Not just, you know, you may not have to focus on education, but, you know, other things that you're good at. You know, do what you love and, you know, go to school for what you love, not what you wanted, your parents are telling you what to do.
Right. And any profession, to really do something, you really have to understand what's going on in the industry.
Yes.
And you have to understand, like, we just had some carpentry work done that it's like, that's a type of skilled labor that you really need to know what you're doing and different types of woods. And, you know, there's like so many different options for people in what they're choosing. And like with an electrician, I mean, you really have to understand how, you know, wiring works. And so there's a lot to every industry, even plumbing. There's a lot to understand about where the pipes are all connected. And, but one of the things that we all go through, and I found some common limiting beliefs that I run into myself with business owners and also just in the research. The first one is the imposter syndrome, and we can actually hear more famous people talking about that now, which is like, soon everyone will know I don't know what I'm doing. And every business owner enters their businesses with that. Do you relate to that?
Yes, because we all enter into not knowing what we're doing.
So we're playing around and figuring it out as we go.
Yes. And I can say that because that's when I started my business. Like, what am I getting into? What do I want to do? You know, it's like, that's just like the first year of my entrepreneurship is to figure out what I want to do, who I want to become, and what I want to do. And so it takes time to really shape us into that. And then once you understand your purpose, or once you understand what you really want to do, that's when you start focusing on that. I think that was the things that we need to teach our generation, is to let them explore, let them figure out what they want to do, and then start getting into the technical education or anything like that to get them to where they need to be.
Yeah. And we all want our kids to flourish in the world and be happy and experience joy and find, you know, what their life work is. That can take different shapes throughout our life because many of us are living longer, and that means that we have more work life.
And I think another thing is to encourage them and to expose them out there, to have more mentors out there.
Yeah.
You know, we need, I think one of the we need to do is have more mentoring programs for these high schoolers. Because I know that coming from with my son and, you know, my nephew that's being graduated this year, he has no motivation. He has no clue what he wants to go to school for. So I was telling my sister, well, she's asking me, like, is there a place where we do a job shadow? I said, yeah, you can call around, you know, ask for a lot of places that are willing to do job shadowing and everything. But yeah, it's just, you know, you have to encourage your son to do it. Not you to do it for him, but you have to encourage him to do it and allow him to explore what he wants to do and figure out what he wants to do.
Yeah, and not, yeah, I see what you're saying. And how do you, one of the common beliefs also we all feel is we're not good enough. When you feel like you've been raised in an environment that has reinforced that, how do you come out of it?
It's just you have to teach yourself to come out of it and says that, you know what, are you going to stay into this unlimiting beliefs and keep this downfall, or otherwise you need to stand up and build your own confidence. Look for the things that makes you feel good and look for the things that encourage you to do what you want to do. If you don't continue doing that, you're never going to reach to the level you want to do. So I think it's a lot to do with, you know, believe in yourself, self-development, and a practice. There's tons of practice. You have to, just because you only do it once and you expect it to happen, no, it's not going to happen. You have to let it take its time, its course, and you have to keep continue practicing, because if you don't practice, and it's like a habit, you know, if it's a habit where, like, just like your habit of reading, if you continue reading and the more you read, the more you grow. If once you stop reading, you're nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I think being a reader for life, however that is, whether you're, you know, whatever your learning style is, there's enough resources out there for you to get books on tape, or if that's your way of listening audio or reading, there's just lots of ways that we have access to information. Yeah, I hear a common belief is that we're not smart enough. But one way to counter that is to get smart, mm-hmm. is to figure out what is it I want to learn.
Yes.
And what are the skills that, like how my brain works? Our daughter Olivia was talking about, she wanted to be a pediatrician. And I think she's okay with me saying this. She was taking a chemistry class and she was just noticing that chemistry was coming quite easily for like a lot of the kids. And she was like, my brain just doesn't work like that. Like, and I'm, you know, moving in this direction, and it's really, I can learn, like she did well in chemistry, but it's looking at, you know, what are the natural tendencies of how your brain works? Because she might be struggling her entire life because it doesn't come easily for her, and not easy because it's the way your brain is wired. And so she shifted professions, you know, her linguistically, you know, she's a major in Spanish. She's been exposed to French speaking people, Spanish speak. She's been in a wide variety of different communities because we're intercultural as much as we can be in Minnesota.
Yes.
And so anyways, she can grab onto language much more easily. Mm-hmm. That's the way her brain works. And so I think it's important for our young people and also for all of us to keep taking risks, that if you're not feeling smart enough in an area, maybe understanding, is my brain not grasping it because maybe it's not designed to work in the way that it needs to for certain professions.
And learning to change your perspective, how do you see things?
Yeah.
Because you need to, like, if you have to look at it from a different point of view. If you're not able to look at straight point on, look at from the right, see what the right says, you know, or look at from the left, and then change the perspective. Once you change the perspective and you start changing the affirmation, I can do this, you can really do this. You know, you have to just change that thought process where from a negative to a positive. The more positive thinking and the more positive energy you vibrate, it's the more life-changing things revolves around you. Like chemistry, right? Maybe it's not working for her, but if she looks at it from a different perspective, you know, to switch her major, it says, oh, you know what? I know chemistry is not my major, but Spanish is. You know, going to that field, wherever life is, it's just about taking that step forward and learning from it. And if, you know, it's something that you know that you cannot do, take a step back and go another route.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of books that are out there on careers and aptitude tests you can take to kind of see what you gravitate toward, because it's a big decision to make, these juniors and seniors, you know, where to go to school and the range of schools when you don't have the exposure to the professions you're making a decision on.
Well, not talking about young kids, even us adults, we're always switching our careers, you know, because we keep developing skills that we never acquired before.
Yeah, and I think we're realizing that we've got like a lot of talent in a lot of different areas, and we don't need to plug into one thing and make it work for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
We can actually do a wide variety of things because that's how we want to shape our life work.
Yes.
You know, more fully to reflect our interests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you have.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you didn't get stuck anywhere. You just keep moving and shifting, and you're going to be shifting, continuing with your businesses.
Yes.
I think that's a beautiful thing. Well, one resource I found, there are many, but I came across Professor Helen McGrath. She has, it's called a bounce back program that was featured in Psychology Today, and it's, schools are adopting it. So bounce back is an acronym for some of the foundational principles of resilience. So please tell me how you identify with each of these, Priscilla. It supports what you've been working on about abundance, thinking, and living. So B for bounce is bad times don't last and things get better.
That's true. I mean,
yeah, that's kind true. Of an easy one.
Yeah.
Score. Oh, we're not scoring. Okay. And the O in bounce, other people can only help if you share with them.
Not necessarily true, because anybody can help. You know, I believe anybody can help. And, you know, you don't have to share. Maybe you don't have to share just to get help, but there's always help everywhere.
Yeah, and I think sometimes if a person is feeling depressed about their life, they have a tendency to kind of go inward. So I think depending upon where you are in your life, if you're not reaching out enough to get help, you may be kind of caught up in a shame spin and not feeling like you can get help. But you're also saying, you know, there's also people are very helpful, but not always what? The right help?
Not the right help, or they can't, they just don't have the connection to help you, because I think it's all about connecting to the right people, doing the right thing, because sometimes we could offer as many help as we can, but the connection is not there. I can use my brother for an example. When he was going through his tough time, I was trying to be there for him, but he's not allowed, and it's only the person will allow to accept the help too.
Yeah, because he needed to reach out.
Yes, and he reached out, and it was to the point where it was, he felt it was too late.
So tell us a little bit more about your brother. I'm so sorry about this.
That's okay. My brother was going through a really tough time in his life, and he didn't know what to do. So he was going through a rough patch where he was with his partner for a while, and she was with another man, and he thought that maybe if he took his own life, that she would realize what he's worth. And, you know, he didn't really, when right before his death, he was going through real, he was just going downfall. And I asked him, if you ever need any help, feel free to reach out to me. He's like, I'll reach out to you if I ever need to. But then I talked to him like on a Wednesday. And then like 2 days later, he decided to take his own life.
So he didn't see hope.
No, he didn't see hope. He didn't see the things that he wanted to see. And he only did it because he wanted to get back on his girlfriend. I think that was his downfall, where like, if I kill myself, she will have a miserable life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, you know, it's tough, but at the same time, I have accepted his decision because he couldn't handle anymore. I mean, he didn't seek, you know, like there wasn't no help connection where he thinks that he can get the help that he wants. So he felt like he's lost, totally lost. And so no matter if anybody tries to change his mind within that 2 days, it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's very sad when people choose to die by suicide. And we feel like there's so much help there, but it has to come from the person who wants the help.
Yes.
And if they're resigned to not getting help, we can't force people to live.
Yep, we can't force them to make the choices, because if we force it upon them, then it's going to make things worse. It's their choices that they have to choose on their own.
Yeah.
And we just have to accept that. We can't force anybody to make choices. Just like us. Nobody can't force the choices on us unless we make it our own self.
Well, what I'm particularly concerned about is how many young people are dying by suicide. I don't have the numbers with me right now, but I'm just reading more about it. And I just feel very sad that the hope is not there like it needs to be mm-hmm. for us. And we need more resources. Also, mental health people aren't, you know, those who are reaching out, also our mental health care workers are limited in because there's not enough of them or the way our system's set up. And so I think we really need to focus on getting more resources to people.
Yes.
And when people are withdrawing from our lives to figure out how to re-engage them, which it sounds like you were trying to do with your brother. I'm just very sad.
Yeah, we are all sad.
But yeah.
It's like we said, we just accept it. And that's, you know, we see it this way. He's in a better place where he's no longer suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, so the U in Bounce acronym is unhelpful thinking only makes you feel worse. So that fits with what happened there. N is nobody is perfect, not you, not your friends, not your family, not anybody.
No one is perfect. Everybody's perfect in their own ways, but you don't have to see perfection in everything.
No.
The unperfection is what makes everybody unique.
One of the things that I totally fell in love with Matthew about was he said he loves me warts and all. You know, when we were dating, I'm like, oh my God, could that have not been the most perfect thing to say to a person?
That's good.
You know, that he could see that I have some flaws, but he's not going to, you know, he's not going to, you know, hold it against me. All right. So C, concentrate. So what I want to say about nobody is perfect, I feel like, you know, some people have spent their lives unexamining their life. And I just feel the fruit of taking the time to examine our lives and really develop our value from within. There's so much focus on the external world and social media that I think that whenever we're feeling about ourselves, we need to disengage from that, either whether it's a thought, whether it's something we're activity we're doing or a person that we're in, if we're just feeling less and less, we need to figure out how to bring ourselves up. And so concentrating on the good things in life, no matter how small, I think having a sense of humor along with that really makes a difference. You
yes.
know, when we can kind of laugh at ourselves, mm-hmm. like this isn't so serious.
Well, I was told that laughing 20 minutes a day will help enlighten your energy.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. So it's just 20 minutes of laughing. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, every single day, just laugh for 20 minutes.
And all right. I think I'm going to do that in spurts, so I spread yeah. it out during the day.
Well, you know, like, when you get up and laugh when you're brushing your teeth and laugh before you go to bed.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Just those little things. Yeah. All right. And E, the last letter in Bounce, is everybody suffers. Everybody feels pain and experiences setbacks. They are a normal part of life.
That's true.
And then the back part, so your how to bounce back, is B, is blame fairly. So negative events are often a combination of things you do, things others do, and plain bad luck. I would also say argue fairly. Like yeah. not bring in the whole kitchen sink, but focus on the issue that's the most pertinent one. What do you think about blaming fairly?
Well, yeah, you have to blame fairly too, because, you know, there are people that didn't cause a problem. They shouldn't be the one to blame. And the one that caused a problem, ask them what their issue is and work with that person versus blaming everybody because it's the other people are not involved in it.
Yeah. And I like to unpack like what the situation is that caused the misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets people really uncomfortable because we're sorting out the accountability part. There's been some responsibility in what, you know, happened or why we're arguing about this or whatever. And I think we need to get comfortable with kind of digging in and sorting that out
mm-hmm.
in a little bit more detail so that we can figure out what we were feeling, like what provoked that.
It's like peeling an onion layer of what was the inner cause of that issue versus, because one issue comes up with causing 10 other issues, and we want to focus on the first first issue, not the other 10 issues.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so that's Blaming Fairly. And the A in back is accept what you can't change and try to change what you can.
Yep, because you cannot change people, but you can change yourself.
Yeah, and my response to it. Oh, okay. The C is catastrophizing or catastrophic. So catastrophizing makes things worse. Don't fall prey to believing in the worst interpretation. And this also comes back to how our mind works, that in the absence of facts, we make up stuff.
That's so true. That's very true, because when one little obstacle has come up, we come with 10 million ideas of what's facing that, and we have to tell ourselves to stop and just, no, that's not what it is. Just focus, whatever that is, we just let it go, because we don't want to have 10 other thoughts that comes in. Because one negative thought comes in, you're going to have 10,000 thoughts that are going to come in. But you have to stop yourself before that other negative thoughts comes in.
Yeah, and not just like allowing, like our brain, thousands of thought comes through our mind, and not hanging on to the most negative one and then making it into like a bigger thing than what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where people say, don't make a mountain out of a molehill.
Mm-hmm. Don't assume things when things are not even true.
Yeah, or until you have the facts.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And the last acronym of Bounce Back is the K. Keep things in perspective. Even the worst moment is but one moment in life.
Yep.
So one of the reasons we fear vulnerability is because of the feelings of shame. We don't like feeling shame. We feel less about ourselves when we feel shame. Dr. Brené Brown developed the really helpful shame resilience theory when she announced or noticed that the fear of being vulnerable hindered meaningful connections with others. So if we're not, we end up then, you know, having superficial relationships instead of, like, when something's not working, sorting it out with us, you know, and talking about our feelings. Because most of the time, people don't like being disconnected. You know, we're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. And if we can release the judgment and try to look at what is the experience that the person is having with this, that they're reacting this way, go deeper in and have a curiosity about that. So Brené Brown has discovered this shame resiliency techniques, and there's four of them. And I thought, you know, when people have limiting beliefs, one of them is they've internalized those beliefs to make them who they are instead of an aspect of what happened. And so Brené Brown says, recognize the shame and understand our shame triggers. You know, these are the physical things that happen in our body. Like, we get elevated, or like for me, my eyes harden. Like when I'm angry or, you know, it's like, don't give me that look, Nancy. Don't go there. You know, or my voice becomes stern. So those are the sensations that can help us to stop and figure out what we're going through.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How are you relating to that?
When I started the energy floating up, you know, I know that the anger is there, and I had to help hold myself back. Says, don't let that anger empower you, because anger is ego, and ego can empower you at any time. You have to take a deep breath in and take a deep breath out and just let it go. If you don't, you're going to cause a huge, more bigger issue, a bigger problem. And now that you have to deal with this.
Yeah. And sometimes that anger is rooted in rumination, where we can't quite get rid of it. Like, it's just because it's trying to tell us something. Mm-hmm. This anger is coming from somewhere. It's not just anywhere. And so that's where the self-reflection in. Mm-hmm. And practicing, the second one is critical awareness. So noticing that sometimes I can let it go. Right?
Yep.
It's easy to do when I can shift. Mm-hmm. But there's other emotions where we have been ruminating in, you know, the negative thinking, and it's tied to being triggered to a deeper feeling that's coming forward that we're not aware of or understand where it's coming from.
Yeah.
We just know that we just feel like we are angry with this person right now.
Yep.
And we want to make sure they know.
Yes.
So we've got recognizing shame and understanding our triggers. Like, where in your body does that anger come up? Like, how do you feel it?
I think it's more in the head.
Okay. So you have thoughts?
Thoughts in the head. And also, I think the tension in the body, too, because when it's coming, you can feel it. I can feel the tension in the body.
So you tighten up?
Yeah, I tighten
up. Okay. I can understand that. That happens, too. Okay. So we're recognizing what those shame triggers are and then practicing critical awareness of ourselves, our environment, and the way things work. And then the third is reaching out to others and sharing ourselves or our stories. Or like I notice when I say, I'm really feeling angry right now about how this is playing out and I'm ready to direct it at you. That, you know, it's like I need to express my feeling so that I can own it.
Yes.
And then I can say, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with this feeling. Mm-hmm. I want to direct it at you. But really, you know, I'm sure there's something that's...
It's about talking out that anger in more of a professional way or more in a way where it's not going to explode.
Yeah. And it's the language. That's where I become the most curious. Like I try to look at how can I communicate myself better, you know, because when you get angry or something, you physically feel it. So you want to act out on it.
Yep.
You know, you want to raise your voice. You want to sock something, you know, you want to do something physical with it. So that's why we do yoga and work out and practice karate and, you know, yes. Other forms of, we're trying to figure out what the language is of how to express ourselves.
Yeah.
And sometimes when it's physically housed in our body deeply, we need to have a physical way of expressing it.
Yes.
Okay. And the fourth one is speaking shame keeps it from flying under the radar screen. So that means that when we're experiencing shame or something out of control, to talk about it, when you shed light on something you're experiencing, shame runs scared. Mm-hmm. So shame expands in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
When you shed light on shame, it shrinks and goes away.
Yeah.
And those are the ways and, you know, some four ways that Brené Brown said are pretty effective in helping us to work with shame because we all experience it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been another wonderful conversation. It's gone really fast.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to say about these upcoming generations of kids? I know you're a grandmother now, so you're involved and you've got a great frame of mind. Those limiting beliefs aren't part of your psyche as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And your prosperity and abundance thinking is helping raise this next generation.
Yes. It's just encouraged them to do what they love to do and just guide them along the way. They're not perfect. You're not perfect. You know, if they make a mistake, just teach them that it's a mistake, that we need to learn from this and that we need to grow out of this. And then it makes us stronger, make us more important, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of times too, we need to tell our kids, you know, we're a work in progress too.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to say the perfect words all the time or do exactly the perfect things, but I've accepted my warts and all, and I'm just doing the best I can. And with our kids, being really honest with them about, you know, some of the things that we're struggling with, because we've had some really big struggle as a global society. And we need to kind of, each of us have had, even though we've all experienced it, it's come up in our lives differently for each of us. And so we can share some of the experiences, but we also need to not bunch it all together and really examine what we've been going through and how some of it's lingering.
Yes.
And to talk about it, it's okay.
We learn as we go.
Exactly. That's what I love about you, Priscilla. You just have wonderful ways in which you look at the world and everything seems workable.
Yes, it is.
Before we go, I also want to make sure that people who are business owners are looking at their finances. We're halfway through the year, almost, not quite, or just entering our 6-month So you have two ways in which people could kind of connect with you about tax and accounting stuff and yes. bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. What are they?
Tax review. So I'm more than happy to do some tax review with you. The best. Looking at the past 3 years and help you to do some tax savings, so I can do that. And that's for the tax reviews. My price is $225. And there's also the financial review. It's just to review your bookkeeping to make sure that everything is on the right track, or you have not even touched your book for the last 6 months or, you know, so forth. I'm more than happy to review your financial reviews with you too. And that's $375.
Okay. And that takes a little bit longer time because there's a lot of details.
Yes.
That you're needing to review. Well, it's been a delight. Thank you for sharing your experiences and your journey here from refugee to U.S. citizen to multi-venture entrepreneur.
Yes. And thank you so much, Nancy, for having me here. So it was a great pleasure to be on this.
Oh, good. All right. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. And Mike Cabea is always here. He's on my left side, so my left arm. Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother, fantastic person in the world. I just love you, man. All right. he keeps twirling that finger around like I'm going to keep going. So anyways, you guys got to get on with your day. So we'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.